Introduction. Geography lessons. Snow laughing matter, are they? Some geography teachers freeze you to the spot with their brain, numbing knowledge of all kinds of weird words. Today's lesson is about glaciation. Let's start with jelliflexion and move on to polynos. Icy stare. Brr. Roughly translated, glaciation is the tricky technical term for how a place gets covered in ice. Jelliflexion's the way frozen ground moves and sinks when the ice melts out of the soil in spring. Polynos are patches of water surrounded by sea ice. I bet you wish you'd never asked. Jelly who? Poly who? But chill out, it could be worse. Much worse. If you thought your classroom was terribly damp and chilly, think you're lucky stars you don't go to school at the freezing North or South Pole. You'd be so bloomin' busy keeping warm you wouldn't have time to moan. Today's lesson is about this cool could take all day. The bad news is that the park poles are the coldest, iciest, and driest places on our whole perishing planet. They're also some of the windiest, and they're horribly far away. In fact, they're at the ends of the earth, and you can't get much further than that. Jolly good winds, you might say, but you'd be wrong. The good news is that the perishing poles are one of the most brilliant bits of geography ever. You'll soon be bitten by the polar bug, if the frostbite doesn't get you first. Getting cold feet? Don't panic. The great thing about horrible geography is that you can visit far-flung places without having to leave home. This book is ideal for armchair travelers, just like you. So find a comfy armchair, chill out, and get stuck in. Just think how impressed your teacher will be with your newfound polar know-how. And you don't even need to pack an ice pick. If you're itching to know what it's really like at the poles without having to get up, try this simple experiment. Wait for a really cold winter's day. I'm talking the sort of day when you need a snowplow just to get out of your front door. The sort of day when going to school is completely out of the question. Then send your little sister outside. Call her in again after a few minutes. Don't forget. Look at your sister closely. Is she A, covered in goose pimples, B, frozen solid, or C, the proud owner of a blue nose? If the answer is all of them, you'll have some idea of what it's like at the poles. Don't worry, your sister won't be able to snitch. Her teeth will be chattering too much. And that's what this book is all about. Yes, colder than the coldest deep freeze and covered in ice several kilometers thick, the poles are the coolest places on the planet. In perishing poles, you can learn how to drive an Inuit dog sledge, search for deep frozen mammoths buried under the ice. Is there any point to this? Make a delicious dip from the contents of a caribou's stomach. Track an iceberg the size of Belgium with ice-cold glaciologist. A glaciologist is a posh name for a scientist who studies ice. Thank goodness someone knows what your teacher's whittling on about. Gloria. Ice to meet you. This is geography like never before, and it's horribly exciting. But be warned. Wrap up your arm before you start reading this book, even if you're staying indoors. You're about to embark on an icy adventure that'll send shivers down your spine. Perishing Poles by Anita Gennari. Race for the Pole, read by Vianna Vance. November 1st, 1911, McMurdo Sound, Antarctica. In the perishing morning cold, the small team of men shook hands with their companions and said their goodbyes. Their mood was solemn. Would they ever see their friends again? No one knew, for they were about to embark on the biggest adventure of their lives. They were trying to become the first people to reach the South Pole and earn a place in history. A horribly hazardous journey lay ahead of them across the icy Antarctic wastes. One man had seen it all before. 9 years earlier, expedition leader Captain Robert Falcon Scott had come within a few hundred kilometers of the pole before freezing cold weather and howling winds forced him back. This time, Steely Scott was determined to succeed or die in the trying. Keep going that way. I know where South is. Preparations for the journey lasted almost a year. But on June 1st, 1910, Scott's ship, Terra Nova, an old whaling ship which had been refitted and strengthened to break through the ice, finally left England. 6 months later, after a stormy passage, Terra Nova moored in McMurdo Sound among the drifting pack ice. Scott and his men built a hut on the beach at Cape Evans on Ross Island and settled in for the long, dark days of winter. In the southern hemisphere, the seasons are the other way round. So from March to October, it's winter at the South Pole. Can you make me a window box? Braving the treacherous temperatures, they busied themselves laying supplies on their route to the pole and conducting scientific experiments. In the evenings, they listened to gramophone records and watched slideshows to help pass the time. So far, so good. Not Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer again. Now, at last, the waiting was over. The time had come to strike for the pole. As he said his goodbyes, Somber, Captain Scott looked cool and calm, but his thoughts were racing. He had left London safe in the knowledge that his greatest rival, the brilliant Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen, was at the other end of the earth, heading for the Arctic. Amundsen was hoping to reach the North Pole first, leaving the South Pole to Scott, or so he thought. On April 6, 1909, American Robert Peary claimed to have reached the North Pole, discovering Amundsen's plans. Without telling anyone, ambitious Amundsen immediately changed course and headed south instead of north. The first thing Scott knew about it was a telegram from Amundsen which read, "Beg, leave, to inform you, Fram, Amundsen's ship, proceeding, Antarctic." But by that time, Amundsen was already on his way. There was no turning back for either of them. The race for the South Pole was well and truly on. 10 days after Scott's arrival, Amundsen and his party landed at the Bay of Whales on the Ross Ice Shelf and set up their camp called Framheim. Everything had gone according to plan. While Scott and his men were saying goodbye, Amundsen was already well underway. Scott's base camp, Ross Island, Amundsen's base camp, Amundsen's route, South Pole, Scott's tent found here, supply depot, and Scott's route. December 1911 to January 1912. By the time Scott left Cape Evans, Amundsen was 12 days in front of him, and his lead was lengthening. By November 17th, Gritty Amundsen and his men had reached the halfway mark at the foot of the Antarctic Mountains. Now another obstacle lay in their path, a steeply sloping glacier called the Axel Heiberg Glacier. It was riddled with treacherous crevices and littered with giant blocks of ice. The struggle up the perilous slope took 4 back-breaking days, but somehow they made it to the top. Now all that lay between them and the pole was a vast expanse of dazzling light ice, called the Polar Plateau, stretching as far as the eye could see. Are we nearly there yet? Then disaster struck. Almost at once the weather broke. For 2 terrible weeks, blinding blizzards and howling winds swept across the plateau. All the gutsy Norwegians could do was shelter in their flimsy tent behind a block of ice and pray they would be saved. Luckily, their prayers were answered. Suddenly, the wind dropped and the weather cleared. With brilliant sunshine and blue skies, the rest of the journey was plain sailing. On December 14th, Amundsen and his hardy companions stood at last at the South Pole. Without a word, the men shook hands. There was no need to say anything. They made it. That was enough. But they did not dare stay very long. As they knew to their cost, the weather could change at any time. Amundsen spent 3 days fixing his position accurately, using a sextant. That's an old-fashioned instrument for navigating by measuring the angle between the horizon and the sun, to prove to everybody he had really made it. Before leaving, the men pitched a tent and planted a Norwegian flag on top. Amundsen also left a note for Scott, asking him to forward news of their triumph to the King of Norway. The note read, "Dear Captain Scott, as you probably are the first to reach this area after us, I will ask you kindly to forward this letter to King Haakon VIII. If you can use any of the articles left in the tent, please do not hesitate to do so. With kind regards, I wish you a safe return. Yours truly, Roald Amundsen." 6 weeks later, the Norwegians returned to Framheim, fighting fit and well. They had completed their epic 2,500-kilometer journey in a staggering 98 days. Meanwhile, Scott was in desperate trouble. As Amundsen proudly posed for photos at the South Pole, Scott and his men were struggling up another treacherous glacier called the Beardmore Glacier, almost 630 kilometers away. Finally, on New Year's Day 1912, they too reached the polar plateau. Now at last the end was in sight and their spirits rose. Little did they know that Amundsen was already on his way home. For his final strike on the pole, Scott picked 4 trusty companions, Edgar Evans, Lawrence Oates, Henry Bowers, and Dr. Edward Wilson. The rest of the support team was sent back. It was a superhuman effort. With temperatures plunging below an icy negative 30 Celsius, every step was agony. But worse was to come. On January 16th, the men spotted a black flag in the distance, and it seemed to be marking a camp. Amundsen had beaten them to it. Their worst fears had come true. In his diary, Scott summed up their dashed dreams. "The worst has happened, or nearly the worst. The Norwegians forestalled us and are the first to the pole. It is a terrible disappointment. Tomorrow we must march on to the pole and then hasten home with all the speed we can compass." Bitterly disappointed, Scott reached the pole 2 days later. "Great God," he wrote in his diary, "this is an awful place." The return journey. Exhausted, starving, suffering from frostbite and with their spirits broken, Scott and his men began their nightmare journey home. Drifting snow covered their tracks and they frequently lost their way. One by one, the men's strength began to fail. On February 17th, Edgar Evans died after a fall into a crevice. A month later, brave Lawrence Oates walked out of the tent into a blizzard. "I'm just going outside," he said, "and maybe some time." It was the last time they saw Oates alive. His feet were so badly frostbitten that he preferred to die alone rather than slow his companions down. On March 19th, with food and fuel rations running dangerously low, the three survivors, Scott Wilson and Bowers, found themselves trapped in their tent by a blinding blizzard. Howling gales and whirling snow made it impossible to battle on. Just 18 kilometers away lay a supply depot stocked with food and fuel that would have saved their lives, but it remained tantalizingly out of reach. For days, the men waited for the weather to clear, but they knew in their hearts they were doomed. Each day, they grew weaker. With the last of his strength, Scott wrote letters home and kept up his diary. The last entry was dated Thursday, March 29th, 1912. He wrote, Thursday, March 29th, 1912. Since the March 21st, we have had a continuous gale. We have had fuel to make 2 cups of tea apiece and bare food for 2 days. Every day we have been ready to start for our depot, but outside the door of the tent it remains a scene of whirling drift. I do not think we can hope for any better things now. We shall stick it out to the end, but we are getting weaker, of course, and the end cannot be far. It seems a pity, but I do not think I can write more. R. Scott. The following November, a search party found the snow-covered tent and the 3 bodies inside it. Scott's diary and letters lay beside him. A snow cairn with a cross made from skis was built over the spot. 5 frostbitten reasons why Amundsen reached the South Pole first. 1. He had a head start. Amundsen pitched camp right at the edge of the Ross ice shelf, a pretty risky thing to do. If the ice had broken off, his camp would have drifted out to sea. But it was a risk worth taking. It meant Amundsen was already about 100 kilometers closer to the South Pole than Scott. By the time Scott finally set off, Amundsen was a long way ahead. Morning. What the? 2. He let husky dogs do all the hard work. They were fast, well-trained, and tough. 6 top-notch dogs could pull a half-ton sledge up to 100 kilometers a day. At first, the men rode on the sledges, then were pulled along on skis. Scott had little experience of using dogs. He also thought it was manlier for his men to pull the sledges themselves, even though it was back-breaking work. One man wrote that it felt like his insides were being jerked out. The going was too tough for the ponies Scott brought all the way from Siberia. The poor beasts sank up to their knees in the snow, and their sweat froze on their fur. To put them out of their misery, the ponies were eventually shot. As for the expedition's 3 motorized sledges, 2 broke down and 1 was dropped overboard as it was being unloaded. 3. His men ate fresh meat. Amundsen knew that without supplies of fresh meat, his men would die of scurvy. That's a deadly disease caused by a lack of vital vitamin C. So when supplies ran out, he did the dirty on the dogs. At a place called the Butcher's Chop on the Polar Plateau, he had half the dogs, over 30, shot dead. Some of them ended up as dog meat, while the men had fresh dog cutlets for dinner. Squeamish Scott thought eating dogs was horribly cruel. His stable diet was pemmican, a ghastly mixture of dried beef and lard, and oatmeal porridge with the odd penguin or seal steak thrown in. Trouble was, pulling sledges used up loads of energy, and there wasn't enough to eat. While Amundsen's team was well fed from the start, Scott's men ran out of vitamins and slowly starved to death. 4. He studied the Inuit people. Amundsen had learned crucial lessons from the local Arctic people about surviving the teeth-chattering cold. He had his clothes made from wolfskin, following an Inuit design. They kept the men warm and dry, even when temperatures plunged below negative 30 Celsius. Scott, on the other hand, preferred clothes made from cotton and wool. The snag was they weren't warm enough and didn't allow sweat to escape. So the men ended up freezing cold and sopping wet. At least they could have taken the teeth out. 5. He wasn't bothered about science. Amundsen's aim was simply to reach the South Pole. So he handpicked a team of top polar experts for the grueling journey. They included expert dog handlers and sledge drivers and a super fit ski champion. Amundsen himself began to train as a doctor, but gave it up to explore instead. As a kid in Norway, he dreamed of reaching the South Pole. He even slept with his windows open in winter to toughen himself up for the trip. Scott, meanwhile, was dead keen on science. He loaded his sledges with heavy rock samples, which made them horribly hard to pull. Actually, the rocks turned out to be crucial clues and showed Antarctica used to be much warmer than it is today. Sadly, the startling discovery came too late for Pierre Scott. 6. He had all the luck. On his return journey, Scott was faced with freak cold weather. Instead of the usual temperatures of negative 30 Celsius, Scott had to cope with temperatures which plunged below negative 30 Celsius. Meanwhile, Amundsen was safely back at base. It's a fact, then. The poles are perilous places to be. As plucky Captain Scott found out to his peril, you need to be horribly tough to survive in the bitter cold. Think you could take them on and still come out alive? First, you'll need to get to know the poles better. A lot better. The Parky Poles. Imagine miles and miles of ice and snow as far as the eye can see. add some battering blasts of wind and some freezing cold temperatures. It's like peeking inside the biggest, coldest, deep freezer on Earth, but without the frozen chips and ice lollies. Welcome to the Parky Poles. Pole position. Forget maypoles, flagpoles, and tent poles. These aren't that sort of pole. No, they're actually the very ends of the Earth at either end of the Earth's axis. That's an imaginary line running down its middle. This means you can only go south from the North Pole, and from the South Pole everywhere is north. Confused? Don't be. Here's Gloria with handy polar diagram number one. North Pole, axis, equator, South Pole, Earth. To muddle matters more, horrible geographers call the regions that surround the North Pole the Arctic, and the regions that surround the South Pole the Antarctic or Antarctica. Together they cover a chilly 8% of the Earth's surface. Time for handy polar diagram number two. The Arctic North Pole, the Antarctic South Pole. But you can't blame horrible geographers. Oddly enough, it was the ancient Greeks who first thought up the names. Bet you didn't know the Arctic comes from the Greek word bear? Only this polar bear wasn't light and furry, and it didn't hunt seals on the ice. No, this was a bear-shaped pattern of stars that shone over the North Pole. And Antarctic simply means opposite the bear. Look at me, I'm Antarctic. You're a lunatic. Actually, the globe-trotting Greeks never went near the Antarctic, so how on earth did they know it was there? The terrible truth is, they didn't. It was all down to guesswork, and the Greeks were brilliant at that. They reckoned there must be a lump of land at the bottom of the world to balance out the lump at the top. Otherwise, the top-heavy Earth would topple over. Incredibly, they were right, but not about the Earth toppling over. Antarctica really does exist. Poles apart. You might think both Parky poles look much the same. I mean, they're both freezing cold and icy, right? But actually, beneath their icy exterior, the poles are worlds apart. So how on earth do you tell which pole is which? Getting your poles in a puzzle? Not sure which end of the Earth you're at? Why not try this ice-cold quiz to tell the parachute poles apart? All you have to do is answer North Pole, South Pole, or both to each question. Ready? 1. It's a continent covered with ice. 2. It's a piece of frozen ocean. 3. There are polar bears, but no penguins. 4. In summer, the sun shines all night. 5. In June, it's the middle of winter. 6. People live here all year round. Answers. 1. South Pole. Underneath all that ice, there's a colossal continent lurking. Antarctica covers 13 million square kilometers. That's almost twice the size of Europe. But 99% of it is capped by a gigantic sheet of ice, nearly 5 kilometers thick in places. That's enough to reach halfway up mighty Mount Everest. The ice is so bloomin' heavy, the land sunk beneath its weight. And that's not all. Buried beneath the awesome ice are massive mountains and violent volcanoes. Luckily, most of them are extinct, but one freaky pink, Mount Erebus, could blow its top at any time. Antarctica's completely surrounded by the Southern Ocean. In winter, around a third of the ocean freezes over, increasing Antarctica's size. Warning, don't fall overboard when you're on your next polar expedition. This stormy sea is so perishing cold, your brain would freeze solid in a matter of minutes. Brr. Antarctica, Southern Ocean, East Antarctica, West Antarctica, Ron Ice Shelf, Polar Plateau, Mount Erebus, 3,793 meters, Weddell Sea, Antarctic Peninsula, Vincent Massif, the highest peak in Antarctica at 4,897 meters, Ross Ice Shelf, and Ross Sea. Two. North Pole. There isn't any land at the North Pole, only frozen ocean. The Arctic Ocean is the world's smallest ocean. It covers 13 million square kilometers and the chilliest. Watch out, brain. For most of the year, it's covered in drifting ice up to 3 meters thick. The Arctic Ocean is almost entirely surrounded by land. This includes the northern parts of Canada, Alaska, Scandinavia, and Russia, together with glacial Greenland. Together, they make up the region geographers call the Arctic. So the Antarctic's land surrounded by sea and the Arctic Sea surrounded by land. Got all that? 3. North Pole. There are no penguins at the North Pole. You might bump into a polar bear, but if a penguin poodles past you, you're at the wrong perishing pole. Are you sure I'm lost? Trust me. 4. Both. If you can't get to sleep, so no change there then. The sun doesn't rise for weeks on end, and it's dark all the time. At the South Pole in winter, it's dark for 6 months on end. Why on earth does this happen? Well, as the Earth orbits, circles round, the sun, it spins once on its axis every 24 hours. The Earth's axis also tilts over at an angle. This means that some places on Earth tilt towards the sun, and others tilt away, so some places have longer hours of daylight. This is why the length of the days and nights changes throughout the year. 5. South Pole. While you're lazing about on the beach during your summer holidays, it's winter at the South Pole. And when it's winter in the north, it's summer down south, if you see what I mean. This is because in June, the northern hemisphere tilts toward the sun and has summer, but the southern hemisphere tilts away from the sun and has winter. And in December, you get the reverse. 6. Both. Local people have lived in the Arctic for years and years, and they're experts at surviving. You can meet some of them in Perishing Polar People. But it's a different story at the South Pole. Only a few horribly hardy scientists live there all year round. It's just too blooming cold, and they're a very long way from home. Your nearest neighbors live in South America, about 3,000 kilometers away. Never mind, you'll have millions of penguins to keep you company. Watch out. What's your score means? So how did you do? Award yourself 100 points for each correct answer. 500 to 600 points? Congratulations! You're in pole position. But don't get carried away. Next thing you'll be suggesting perilous polar field trip to your teacher. Perish the thought. 300 to 400 points. Not bad. You're obviously warming to your subject. But be careful. You could still slip up on the ice. 200 points and below? Terrible. You're really skating on thin ice. You'll never be a geographical genius at this rate. But if you really can't tell your poles apart, here's a simple diagram to help. You'll need to turn the book upside down to spot the South Pole, or stand on your head. Polar Weather Report. Planning a personal polar expedition? Best check out Gloria's Perishing Polar Weather Forecast before you venture out. Today will start off barely cold with temperatures well below freezing, except gale force winds in the afternoon with the likelihood of a blizzard. And watch your step in winter, it will be pitch black all day. Tomorrow will be much the same, and the next day, and the day after. Summer might be a bit warmer, if you can last out that long, and at least you'll be able to see where you're going. Polar weather warning. If you thought it was chilly in winter where you live, think again. The perishing poles are absolutely freezing. Whatever time of year you pick, you'll need to wrap up warm if you want to stay alive. The forecast for the foreseeable future is teeth chatteringly cold. It's official. The perishing poles are the coldest places on Earth. At the South Pole, the average temperature is a teeth chattering negative 39 Celsius. That's about 5 times colder than inside your freezer, but quite toasty compared to a place called Vostok.